mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, more post-election reaction. Voters this week approved additional funding for critical children's services. Hancock County JFS Director Randall Galbraith discusses what the community's support means to the agency. Plus, in our Throwback Thursday segment this morning, the first gentleman. Won't be this time, but it will happen eventually. So what will a gender-flipped White House look like? And the Findlay YMCA has something special cooking for the month of November. Executive Director Stephanie Parsons will tell us what's happening. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Thursday, November 7th, 2024. There is still at least one race in Ohio that we don't have results for yet. The 9th Congressional District remains too close to call. That's the one between Marcy Kaptur and Derek Marin in the Toledo area, the 9th Congressional District. Last I saw, Kaptur leads by some 1,200 votes. This is out of a combined 351,000 votes that have been counted. 1,200 vote margin. So it works out to be 48.1% to 47.8%. So still no definitive winner in that race. They still have ballots that have yet to come in that the mail hasn't delivered. They'd be postmarked by Election Day but haven't come in. Of course, overseas ballots in the military and that kind of thing, one could assume, would be added to that total. So it may be a while. And then, of course, by Ohio law, a recount is triggered if the margin is less than 0.5%, which this race currently is. So stay tuned. That one is still not settled yet. In case you missed this from the election results, the sheriff of Portage County was reelected. Bruce Zukowski received 51% of the vote over his Democratic challenger, John Barber. You remember Sheriff Zukowski gained national attention last month when he made a social media post asking people to write down the addresses of those who have Kamala Harris signs in their yards so that officials will know where to send undocumented immigrants who he referred to as human locusts. So that garnered some attention. He later apologized, but following his win, Sheriff Zukowski took to social media again, where he posted a meme of a teddy bear flashing its backside with an explicit caption. It says here, I have not seen the post, so I don't know exactly what the explicit caption is, but I can guess. I can imagine that may be. So, a couple of election stories that you may not have heard. I want to make sure that you are completely informed here. Yeah, that's our job. So what happens to J.D. Vance's Senate seat come January? The process will work like this. First, Mr. Vance will resign from his position in the Senate before being sworn in as vice president, and then Governor Mike DeWine will choose his successor. Now, the governor has not publicly given any names under consideration, but last week he did say that there were a few people who were interested in that position. Whomever is selected to replace J.D. Vance, they will serve through December of 2026, and then obviously will have the option to run for a full term, which you would expect that that individual probably would. About the only thing that we know is that it'll be a Republican. Now, the governor doesn't have to not necessarily appoint a Republican to fill that seat, but given the fact that J.D. Vance is a Republican and the governor is a Republican, you can guess that that seat will remain red. So that's the process, and there's no big rush necessarily because J.D. Vance doesn't have to step down until January when he's sworn in as the new VP. And this I thought was kind of interesting because it does have an impact on the election or on future elections. Ohio is predicted to see a decline in its population in the coming years. This is according to the latest report from the Ohio Department of Development, which predicts the state will lose 675,000 residents by the year 2050. The Department of Development says the decline will be due to an aging population, slow migration patterns, and declining fertility rates. During the same time frame, the population of the United States as a whole is expected to increase by 12%. So, you know what that'll mean with respect to elections, less and less influence for the state of Ohio. Right now, it's what, 17 electoral votes? In the past, it was like 19, not all that long ago, and even more in the past, but we continue to slide in the other direction means less and less influence on national elections. So not just because we are going more reliably red, but because the population of the state is shrinking, especially as compared to some of the other states that have overtaken us as big reward states for national elections in the Electoral College. So, every election, it seems, we have one of these stories, those stories that prove every vote counts. Because you hear people say, oh, my vote doesn't count anyway. I'm not going to vote because what does one vote mean? Millions of votes. Every vote counts. In one tiny Louisiana town, people in the village of, let me see if I can get this right here, Tangipahoa, Louisiana. It's a tiny village. People were tasked with selecting who would be their next mayor, and the challenger unseated the incumbent by one vote. Jenny Gray got 118 votes. Incumbent Mayor Sheila Martin got 117 votes. So every election there is one of those stories, and that is this year's. One vote. Every vote matters. Don't let them tell you anything different. Let's see. So again, we're kind of transitioning to thinking about the holiday season now, and especially for those who are traveling, got to make your plans now because the longer you wait, the more expensive it's going to get. There are some travel dates you want to avoid if you are taking to the air or even hitting the road for the holidays. According to a new survey, the day before Thanksgiving, November 27th, will be the busiest day, followed by the days after November 30th, when most folks be heading home from their Thanksgiving trip. If you look ahead to the Christmas holiday, December 23rd ranks as the most congested travel time, with the days after December 31st the most common window to return. It says here, Florida ranks as the top spot for a November-December vacation. And for New Year's Eve, New York City, of course, ranks as the number one tourist destination. No big surprise. People go to Times Square to see the ball drop. Have you ever done that? I have a friend of mine that went to New York one time for the Times Square ball drop New Year's Eve. Said it's a bucket list thing. You got to go and do it once, but I'd never do it again. You know, it's nuts. But anyway, most travel happens December 31st and January 2nd. Talker Research surveyed 2,000 Americans to find the data on the most congested travel days. So, just to let you know. And a couple of other items here among the first things you need to know this morning, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. You remember the other day when we mentioned that Americans seem to be lonelier, that 37% of Americans worry about social isolation, 35% of Americans say they haven't made a new friend in more than a year. Well, maybe that is not such a bad thing. Look on the bright side. There's always a bright side, right? Apparently, according to a study out of the UK, researchers at the University of Exeter have found that if your social circle shrinks as you get older, that could be good for your health. They studied the socialization habits of other primates, namely monkeys, and they found that the monkeys with fewer social interactions, older monkeys had fewer social interactions than younger ones, not a big surprise, but this limited socialization reduced their risk of catching an infection. The study co-author, Aaron Siracusa, says our findings suggest a powerful reason why many animals, including humans, might actually want to reduce their social connections as they age. So, hey, like I said, you always have to look at the bright side, so I thought I would point that out. We were talking the other day about the fact that people seem to be more lonely today, aren't making as many friends, but there's always an upside to that. So if you are a crotchety old hermit, maybe it's not such a bad thing after all, right? And lastly, here among the first things that you need to know this morning, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, something for you to think about as you are just waking up and starting your day, a new study suggests that feeling more sleepy during the day as you get older, which many of us do, I know I do, and we're sleepy during the day, that could mean you are at higher risk for developing dementia. Study published this week, over 35% of those who experienced daytime sleepiness developed a cognitive risk syndrome that could lead to dementia. The syndrome often results in a slow waking speed, or no, I'm sorry, a slow walking speed. Is that what that says? Slow walking speed, okay. A slow walking speed and memory loss. The authors of the study, it's a French study, authors said establishing the relationship between sleep dysfunction and cognitive risk is important because early intervention may offer the best hope for preventing dementia. So next time that you catch your coworker yawning at their desk, go and shock them. You know, is boo, wake up, you know. Not only is that fun to startle your coworkers back into a state of consciousness, but it will also help them in the long run. Medically, yeah. So cognitively. I'm just trying to help. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Thursday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Gradually becoming sunny today with a high around 60. Just a few clouds tonight with a low around 40. The Findlay Police Department says a woman was injured in a crash that occurred when a vehicle pulled out in front of her. Police say the 21-year-old from Findlay was driving westbound on Tiffin Avenue when an SUV being driven by a 17-year-old from Macomb made a left turn onto Tiffin Avenue from H Street, and the two vehicles collided. Police say the 21-year-old from Findlay was injured in the crash and taken to Blanchard Valley Hospital. The other driver was issued a citation by police. Both vehicles had to be towed from the scene of the crash. The Buckeye State will have two new senators when the next Congress convenes.
Bernie Moreno will replace Sherrod Brown as one of the two Ohio senators. The Trump presidential victory means J.D. Vance will vacate his Senate seat to become vice president. That leaves Ohio with an open Senate seat, and it becomes the responsibility of Governor Mike DeWine to fill it. In the primaries, you may remember DeWine backed Matt Dolan over Moreno, and he would be a likely choice. Other possibilities are Jane Timken, Vivek Ramaswamy, and John Husted.
ONN's Tracy Townsend reporting. The Findlay-Hancock County Public Library is celebrating 10 years of participation in Dolly Parton's Imagination Library. The program mails nearly 2 million age-appropriate books each month to children from birth to age 5. Brittany Lutz with the library, on with WFIN's Chris Oak, says currently there are more than 2,500 Hancock County children in the program.
There's still a lot of kids out there that aren't signed up for that program that we're looking to reach. We want to get free books into their home. If you've had a kid in the program before, you get different books. So it's absolutely worth signing up every single one of those kiddos.
She says the Findlay-Hancock County Public Library will be holding a 10th anniversary celebration of participation in Dolly Parton's Imagination Library on November 16th with story times, crafts, and activities. Get more details in the story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online at WFIN.com.
Today's cover story, we get more post-election reaction here. Voters on Tuesday approved additional funding for Critical Children's Services. Hancock County JFS Director Randall Galbraith is with us in the studio to talk about what the community support means to their agency. And Mr. Galbraith, thanks very much for taking the time. As always, we appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Chris.
So how nervous were you going in to the election on Tuesday? Because, you know, whenever you're asking voters to approve a new tax levy, no matter how needed it is or how worthy the cause and the purpose of it, it's always a bit of a crapshoot.
Yeah, there's a permanent thumbprint on my phone from watching the election results come in. I was extremely nervous about it. We had a contentious presidential election.
Sure.
12 issues on the ballot here in Hancock County. Several of them were tax issues. Mm-hmm. So I was thrilled, overjoyed, and humbled when I saw that the levy had passed.
Yeah. We talked before the election about the need for this. Kind of recap what this means and how this funding will be used moving forward.
So this levy is replacing the one that was passed in 2020. That 2020 levy was a five-year levy, so it expires at the end of 2025. Mm-hmm. This is our first chance to put a replacement on the ballot to continue that funding stream after December 2025. So we did capture the current value of real estate. So it's the same millage as it was in 2020, 0.8 mil, but on the current value of real estate. So we had a slight uptick from 1.7 million to 2.1 million. And that means we can continue to offer quality placement services for kids that are in our custody. This is all about placement of children in foster care.
Yeah, that is a good point. I mean, this doesn't go into the general bucket. This is specifically for this purpose.
Yes, and it very much allows the county to continue to budget for other things.
One of the things, again, we discussed in the lead up to the election is the incredible increase in the expense of placing these children that have specific and special needs.
Yes, so some of our most specialized placements are up. The costs are up 60% over the last two to three years.
So if you do the math with that kind of an increase, and yes, you are getting an increase in revenue from this renewal, but this doesn't necessarily fix all the problems or answer all the concerns.
No. This is a statewide problem. There's a statewide task force working on that. We also here in Hancock County Job and Family Services have to be very cogent of where we're putting kids and do they need the programs being offered? How long are they staying there while still making sure that the kids are getting the treatment that they need?
Yeah. So what is the, you know, this isn't going to answer all of those questions or solve all of those problems. So what will, or is it just something that this is a constant case of whack-a-mole?
It's a little bit of a case of whack-a-mole. If I had the answer, if I could wave a magic wand, Chris, I wouldn't be here talking to you. I'd be making more money somewhere else.
Fair point.
But I think what it allows us to do is not so much concentrate on the funding issue and concentrate more on the kids. And I think that if the earlier we can reach children and families, mm-hmm. not necessarily through my programs, but through the schools, through the medical providers, through nonprofits like Children's Mentoring Connections, sooner we can reach those families, we can stop the problems earlier. We can alleviate financial stress. Kids never get this. So the idea is to put me out of business, and I'd be very happy if we could do that.
Yeah, I think that is an important point to make and to talk about and expand on, because for a couple of reasons. Number one, this may not be the last time you come in and be asking for voters to approve more money, given the nature of the beast. But also understanding what's being done to make sure that those costs are kept in line as they continue to increase.
Absolutely. So, some of the things we've done since the last levy is we have assigned a caseworker, specifically juvenile court, to work with those families that are coming in on the delinquency side. So it's not necessarily abuse, neglect case. There's something else going on in the home that hasn't reached our agency yet. Mm-hmm. So can we wrap services around that family and stop the problem before it becomes a major problem? Mm-hmm. Working with all the schools in the county to make sure that their reports are being taken seriously, and working with Family and Children First Council to make sure that our services that children and families that are not necessarily involved with Job and Family Services are getting the services they need at that early point as soon as possible. And, you know, there's some Help Me Grow initiatives out of the Health Department and Blanchard Valley Center that also are extremely helpful in those ways. So it's a partnership around the community. I'm kind of the agency of last resort, so the more we can work with those partners early with kids, the less money the taxpayer has to pay to me.
It's kind of the embodiment of that saying that it takes a village.
It takes a village,
yeah.
Yes.
Let me ask you this to kind of put all of this in perspective. Again, we talk about the incredible cost of placing a certain number of kids that have these unique and special needs and demands. To address the issues that they face. How big of a percentage does that represent of the overall caseload?
Okay, so at the end of September, we had approximately 75 children in our custody. Mm-hmm. Of those, about 10 were in some kind of high-need placement. Mm-hmm. That represents, those 10 kids represent about two-thirds of the placement costs.
Wow. So you're talking, what, maybe 20% at most of the cases that account for 60% of
yes.
the cost.
Yes, yes.
As you were saying, and it kind of leads back to what you were talking about before, the need to identify and intervene earlier and so that cases don't get to that point?
Absolutely. So we receive about 1,500 reports a year of abuse and neglect. We open about 500 of those reports for cases. Obviously, we don't have 500 children in our custody, so a lot of those get resolved mm-hmm. before it gets to that point. So yeah. it's continuing to work with all the providers in the county to make sure that those numbers continue to go down. Mm-hmm. Because we're talking a small number of children with extremely specialized needs that are most of the cost.
Yeah, but obviously you talk about that caseload of the number of reports that you have to deal with. Obviously that's another
yes.
Issue all unto itself, having the staffing to be able to do that. And again, this levy that we're talking about the past this week doesn't address that, but it does alleviate some of the pressure
yes.
on other areas.
This is one area of a social services agency where it's a little strange because our salary and benefit costs are a little under $1 million a year, mm-hmm. while our placement costs are $3.5 million a year. Hmm. So it's the salary and benefits of the caseworkers aren't really our biggest cost, and that's not true.
Yeah,
in most places.
That's very different. Yeah.
So once again, it's all about getting to those families as early as possible.
Yeah. So there is a trickle down or a trickle up
yes.
effect, if you will, to all of this. And again, as you talk about all of the partnerships, all of the resources that come together to help these kids and these families navigate these issues, I guess we would be remiss if we didn't also mention the great need and the continuing need for foster families.
Yes, and again, that's while that's our lower our lowest cost in terms of placement, mm-hmm. We still need those families. We desperately need those families, and we'll continue to. One of the things that we did to mitigate costs is we also hired a specialist to recruit and retain foster families. And that person herself is a foster mother. Mm-hmm. So having that experience within the agency to know how to navigate our system and all the frustrations that come with it.
Yeah.
So we continue to look for those people that would love to or at least look into being foster parents.
Yeah. Again, Hancock County JFS Director Randall Galbraith with us this morning talking about the additional funding that was approved by voters earlier this week for these critical children's services. We have a link for more information at our webpage, goodmornings.net. Randall, thanks very much for dropping by.
Thank you for having me.
So as we continue to pick apart and analyze the results of this week's election and the ramifications thereof, this may be something of a sidebar story, but kind of an interesting one, because even though it didn't happen this time, didn't happen in 2016, but someday in the future, it is probably inevitable that Americans will elect their first woman president. And her husband will then become the first gentleman. What would that look like? Back in November of 2016, when Hillary Clinton became the first woman to be nominated at the top of a major party ticket, we spoke with Gerald Weaver, who crafted a novel imagining just that scenario, and it's called The First Gentleman. It is today's Throwback Thursday. How much of this is a political story, and how much is a love story with a backdrop of presidential politics?
It's actually half and half. It's both. It begins as a love story, and I want to say it's a grown-up love story because the woman is a little older. She's a psychologically, emotionally, and physically wounded war veteran, Congressional Medal of Honor recipient, and she falls for a man who's slightly older than her, and what she finds attractive about him is not that he's good-looking or well-to-do, but that he's a single father, and he's very, very good at it, and she's attracted to the way in which he's nurturing and supportive, and that's the basis of their love affair, which is the first half of the book, and he's happy to support her. And then the second half of the book is he supports her as she begins her political quest for the White House, and then it becomes a sort of a political social commentary. And the two are connected. The love story and the political story are connected because she only really cares first and most about her family and her relationship. She really doesn't have that much of an ego investment in politics, so she's able to speak from the heart and say things that she feels. And I wrote this, one of the reasons I wrote it was that I wanted to answer what I thought was the hunger out there for a kind of politics that's different from what we've been used to.
This is not about specific politics or a particular race or a particular candidate. This is really larger than that, examining the whole big picture.
One of the things I also wanted to do with this book is pay an homage to Charles Dickens. You can read the book as a love story and a political social commentary, mostly a love story, and then if you're a Dickens fanatic or a Dickens scholar, you will recognize that there's almost every single one of Dickens' novels referred to in there in some way. And I think that's what I wanted to capture, is that large scope that the Dickens novels always do. So there's a little bit of everything in here.
Yeah.
I mean, it's more than just a political story or a love story because of that.
And, you know, I was thinking about this, too. While a woman president would be a seamless transition for the most part, I mean, it would be a woman doing what a man had always done, but doing pretty much the same. Some parts of the traditional role of the president's spouse are fairly gender specific. So the first gentleman will have a unique responsibility of defining exactly what his role will be. And in the large sense, that's something that very rarely happens in the American system of government.
Right. And the reason I did not name this book Madam President, but decided to name it The First Gentleman is, one of the things I wanted to nudge along, because I have a daughter, is I wanted to push the evolution of gender roles forward. And I think the world will be a better place and a nicer place if the women have more equality than they have today. But the reason I called it The First Gentleman is I think that it will be just as important, if not important, to see how the first gentleman acts in support of his wife, the president.
Mm-hmm.
And in my novel, he's very supportive. He takes care of the kids, but he's still very much a manly man. And the idea, I think, there is that a lot of men's eyes will be on the first gentleman to see how he handles that role. And I think if gender roles are going to change, it's going to be the change is not going to be because the women are demanding change. It's going to be because of men change. And I think men will be looking at the first gentleman much more clearly. And in my book, it's obvious that he's a manly man, but he's also supportive of his wife and has no problem taking the secondary role.
You know, that actually brings up an interesting point, too, because I've often wondered why it has taken so long for Americans to embrace the idea of a woman president. I mean, you know, we had Margaret Thatcher as prime minister in England 30 years ago, and we've had women leading other countries for many, many years. And I wonder, to what extent, if at all, has the idea of an awkwardness with the idea of a first gentleman perhaps played into that?
I think that's exactly right, too. I think the idea of how a man who is supposed to be in charge, is supposed to be the breadwinner, at least traditionally,
right,
stepping into the role of supporting the most important position and woman in the world, which is what the president would be, is a very, very interesting question. And I think one of the reasons that other countries have been able to have female leaders is they're not their parliamentary systems, and their leaders are picked by the party. And in the United States, it's actually an election. So I think it's much more the whole country and all the people have to sort of get used to the idea of a woman being in charge.
But you believe that this will happen eventually, right? And sooner rather than later.
Yes, I do. And I think that it's the end of politics. At least it's the end of politics as usual. The 24/7 news cycle, the blurring of the line between public and private, you know, everybody has a Facebook page, reality television, a lot of that, I think, have sort of taken politics out of the political realm and moved it into the social and cultural realm. And certainly, I think that candidates will begin to come from outside of politics more in the future. And I think that some woman, and maybe she's going to be like my candidate, maybe it's a wounded war veteran who's a female candidate, is looking at the sort of groundwork that Trump has laid here and is saying, you know, I can be an outspoken, authentic, genuine candidate and come from basically out of nowhere to rise to political prominence. And I think there are quite a few women out there who are taking note of it.
You know, the other part of this is when it does eventually happen, how much added pressure does that put on the first female president? Much like many people said, you know, there was a lot of extra pressure on Barack Obama as the first black president.
I think that the amount of pressure would be incredible because, you know, if it's a disaster, if you have a horrible presidency or make a lot of mistakes, you would be setting back candidates from that, from your gender, or as Obama could have set back black candidates in the same way.
Yeah. It is a really interesting novel. Like I said, it is a love story. There's a bit of satire in there. It's an homage to Dickens in looking at that big picture of American politics and what it might look like with a woman president, the first woman president in the White House. It is called The First Gentleman. Gerald Weaver is the author. And do you have a website in conjunction with the book?
Yes, you can go to my author website, which is geraldweaverauthor.com. You can also go to Amazon and look at the book. And I have a YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter and Facebook accounts as well. All those places will point you in the direction where you can buy the book.
Again, from November of 2016, our conversation with Gerald Weaver, author of The First Gentleman. And it is today's Throwback Thursday. Like I said, didn't happen this time, didn't happen in 2016. You got to figure that it's going to happen eventually. Like we said, probably sooner rather than later. You just wonder who that first female president will be. You can go to goodmornings.net to learn more about the book and pick up a copy of The First Gentleman, today's Throwback Thursday.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
So this is a perfect story for all of those football fans whose season has not necessarily gone as well as they had hoped. And yes, I'm talking to you, Browns fans. Fireball Whiskey is releasing a new variation on their famous drink made with the tears of disappointed football fans. It's called Crier Ball. I kid you not. This is a real thing. It's actually made with the tears of football fans. The limited time release takes the pain and agony of football fans and infuses it with the iconic cinnamon whiskey. Now you will be able to drink the actual tears of your losing team to drown in your sorrows. Or, I guess, by the flip side, you'll be able to enjoy the actual tears of your rivals when you defeat them. So there works that way, too. It is available in... they're making it available in tents stationed outside stadiums through the month of November. And, of course, you must be 21 or older to enjoy. But enjoy being a relative term, depending on whether you're drowning your sorrows or celebrating your victories, I guess. But Crier Ball Whiskey. I love it. That is awesome. Elsewhere in the broken news this morning, the odd and unusual side of the headlines. Now, this is unusual, to be sure. The first wooden satellite in the world has been launched into space. That's right, a satellite made out of wood, which is not a typical material for manufacturing satellites. Usually made of, what, aluminum and, carbon fiber and, all of that metal, but wood. It is a palm-sized satellite built by Japanese researchers that will be flown to the International Space Station and released into orbit about 250 miles above the Earth. It will stay in orbit for several months, and the idea is to see how wood endures the extreme environment of space. Which is actually kind of an interesting thing. I guess if we are going to colonize other planets, maybe we should learn how wood fares in the atmosphere or lack of atmosphere of space. The invention is an early test of using timber in the exploration and colonization of the moon, Mars, and other planets, I guess, sometime on into the future. If it's successful, they say it could open the door to other uses for wood in space. Now, no word on whether we would, get a rocket lumber ship to take lumber to build things in space. I don't know how that would work exactly, or whether you would actually build a building on Earth and then launch it into space somehow. I don't know how that would work, whether you're going to grow trees in space, but yeah. Is kind of an interesting experiment, and apparently it's going to be it has been launched. So, stay tuned. Some of the other broken news headlines from the International File this morning. Hackers are demanding that Schneider Electric, a company in France, an electric company in France, Schneider Electric, they got a hold of massive amounts of data from this electric company, customer data and that kind of thing. They have hacked into the electric company's computer system and taken all of this data hostage. They are demanding a payment of $125,000 in ransom in baguettes. We don't want cash. We don't want gift cards. We want baguettes. Because, France. let's see here. One user on X apparently took responsibility for the cyber attack resulting in 40 gigabytes worth of data being stolen. Oddly, the hacker or hackers appear to want bread instead of dough. As it turns out, the hacker claims that if Schneider Electric admits to the data breach, they only have to hand over $62,000 in baked goods. They admit that they have been hacked publicly. Mm-hmm. $125,000 in baguettes. All right. I guess it is France. And a couple of other items here domestically in the broken news. A Tennessee man. Isn't this everybody's worst nightmare? A Tennessee man says he was charging the battery in his truck in his driveway. I don't know if he had to jump it to get it started or whether he just knew the battery was low and he needed to charge the battery, whatever. So he's got his truck in his driveway and he's charging the battery. Scott Hill tells local news reporters he left his vehicle running for just a few minutes when he came back outside It was gone. He just had to run back in the house for a couple of minutes. He comes back, and in that time, his truck was stolen while it was running in his driveway. However, there is a twist. The faulty battery that he was trying to charge actually helped him recover his truck after it died at a nearby gas station. Something that the thieves probably didn't count on. Mr. Hill took off to find his truck and approached the alleged thieves at the gas station just down the road. The thieves fled on foot and were later arrested by Memphis police. So I guess he got the last laugh after all. How about that? And finally, in the broken news this morning, talk about adding insult to injury, quite literally in this case. A bicyclist in Oregon is now suing Columbia River Fire and Rescue for nearly $1 million after an ambulance struck him while he was on his bicycle, rushed him to the hospital, and then stuck him with the bill. The ambulance hit him, so because it's an ambulance, they put him in the ambulance, took him to the hospital, and then sent him a bill for $1,862 for the hospital run. Talking about adding insult to injury. Literally, a lawyer for the victim says his client, 71-year-old William Heisch, suffered a fractured nose as well as scrapes and contusions and other injuries across his body, which have cost him some $47,000 in medical expenses so far, and he expects to pay another $50,000 in the future, according to a copy of the lawsuit obtained by the Oregonian newspaper. Mr. Heisch is also seeking $900,000 for pain and suffering, stating he suffered decreased range of motion, reduced grip strength, and other symptoms as a result of the accident. But, I mean, who does that? The ambulance hit him, took him to the hospital, and then billed him for the hospital run. I mean, what, were they out stalking potential victims, drumming up business by running people over and then running them to the hospital? That's a great scheme. There you go. I mean, I'm not a fan of frivolous lawsuits, but in this case, I think I might sue him too. You hit me. Of course you took me to the hospital. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Ever thought about joining the Findlay Rotary Club?
I'm Scott Holman, president of Resolute Wealth Advisor and current president of Findlay Rotary Club. As Rotarians, we collectively rely on the strengths of each member to impact our club's vision of uniting local leaders to influence positive change.
Our ability to influence positive change locally and around the world grows through membership. To learn more about how you can join the Findlay Rotary Club and have impact in our community, go to FindlayRotary.org and click on Join.
This message provided by WFIN.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. This is a YouGov survey of 3,395 U.S. adults, so little under 3,500 adults responding to this survey from YouGov. They asked, how do you feel about the results of this year's election? A basic question. I thought this was kind of interesting. 25% of those respondents in the survey said that they were thrilled with the outcome of this year's election, 25%. 20% on the other end of the spectrum said that they were devastated by the outcome of the election. 19% say they were happy, 16% say they were disappointed, and 10% were indifferent. Wow, what about that 10%? They are indifferent to the results of this year's election. I didn't think that was possible. Polarizing as it has been, it seems like everybody has strong opinions one way or the other, but 10% are indifferent. They went on to ask, how united or divided is the country right now in the aftermath of the election? Half of those in the survey said we are very divided. 20% said somewhat divided. 13% said somewhat united. And 8% said that we are very united. I don't know. I would imagine there's probably a lot of the same people who said they were indifferent about the results. But this was very telling. A couple of the other questions they asked in this survey. They said, have you ever told someone, maybe this election or an election previously, have you ever told someone that you voted for a different political candidate than you really had? And I was surprised. 84% said no. They have never told someone that they had voted for a different political candidate than they actually had. Now, I don't know if they were referring specifically to, I don't know if the question led them to believe they were talking about specifically about national candidates, but especially when you boil down to like the local races, when maybe you know someone in a smaller community, but you didn't actually vote for them. You might consider them a friend, but you didn't vote for them. I would think that maybe you would be more likely to tell that little white lie. But 84% said that they had never said it. 8% admitted that they had. 4% were not sure. And this also is kind of interesting. They asked, have you ever told someone that you voted when you actually hadn't? Regardless of who you voted for, just telling people that you had voted when you hadn't. Again, 85% said no. They have never said that. 8% admit that they had lied about voting at all. And again, 4% were not sure. So, the Findlay YMCA has something special cooking for the month of November. Quite literally, as it turns out. Stephanie and Sierra are here from the Findlay YMCA to tell us what's happening. Ladies, thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having us, Chris.
So, talk a little bit about the, first of all, actually a couple of things involving food to mention. The first of which is coming up, this weekend, right?
This weekend.
The Men Who Cook event.
Men That Cook, okay. Yes.
Tell us about this here.
Yeah, so we're bringing Men Who Cook back. So this is an event we've been doing on and off for quite some time now. Mm-hmm. Very popular event. We're bringing in 8 local community leaders who are from all over sector-wise. We have a couple folks from Whirlpool, a couple guys from Marathon, mm-hmm. a couple financial guys. So all coming in the room competing against each other for the most tips. So they're going to be bringing their favorite tailgate dish that they cook.
Okay.
And we get to be their taste testers and then decide whose is the winner.
Well, that's a rough job. I can see why you like this event so much.
Yes, we have a blast, obviously, because we get to try everything.
Yeah.
This year's really fun, though, because we have some unique dishes on the menu. We have someone who's actually from Brazil as one of chefs.
Okay.
So he's bringing a very unique dish to the room.
I'm sure.
Which will give people a chance to try something new. Plus, mm-hmm. we have some tried and true chefs coming back that are bringing back their winning dishes from previous years.
Okay.
So it's going to be a great competition and some good food for
so
sure.
So definitely kind of an all-star thing here.
Yes.
Year in the event.
Very competitive.
And so I take it from your description that it's not just you guys that get to sample all of the food, right?
Yes, it's all our guests. So
okay.
Tickets are $25. That gets you access to the event and then all the chefs plus extra goodies. We're going to have raffle baskets there. We're also going to have lots of games. It's family friendly. So kids are free with paying adults, so bring the kids out. We'll have games. Football is going to be on the TVs as well. So,
well,
lots
if you're
going
to have tailgate dishes, you got to have football.
Football.
I guess
right.
That makes sense. Right. So this is happening on Saturday,
correct?
Right?
Yes.
Do folks need tickets in advance, or can we get them at the door?
Yeah, so you can just go to our website. If you just go to FindlayYMCA.com,
okay.
You can look at our events page, click there, mm-hmm. Go to our Facebook page, Instagram, all our links are there. But you can also buy tickets at the door as well. So if you don't get a chance to get your ticket ahead of time, we'll also be taking tickets at the door.
Like you said, it's a great family-friendly event for all.
Yeah, there's going to be kids' crafts. We'll have games. We're going to have cornhole, giant Jenga there. Lots of things for the kids to do. We're all going to be in the ballroom together. So it's going to be really vibrant, electric, event going on. Lots of fun. So we're excited.
So more details at the YMCA's website. And then the proceeds from this, what are they earmarked for? What do you use the money that you raise for this for?
Yeah, so all of our proceeds will go to our open door scholarships for those that cannot afford the YMCA membership or programs. Mm-hmm. And it really just benefits so many people in our community.
I was going to ask, and I don't mean to put you on the spot here. If you don't have an exact number, give me a dirty look here. But how many, I mean, what percentage of the folks that you see at the Y are there because of, scholarship programs like that?
Yeah, it's probably anywhere from 10 to 15% of
insignificant. That's quite a few people.
It is. And the other benefit of our open doors is programs. So within that 10 to 15%, I'm including individuals that need some access help for our programs, along with childcare.
Yeah. Speaking of which, let's talk about the other thing that's coming up in November, the Book and Cook.
Oh, yes.
So this is the 14th, it says here. Tell us what this is.
Yeah, so the Book and Cook events are great events for our little kiddos. They get to come in, they get to learn about the book, read the book. They have a snack that goes along with the book as well. So it's great for the younger kids. So think preschool age kids through elementary. They can come in and come to the Y.
Is that something, again, that folks need to register for?
Yeah, so go to our website. That is definitely one you want to register for. Okay. So, and it is for members and non-members, so both can register via our website.
Okay, is there a deadline? You said the event is November 14th, it says here.
Typically we like a few days before, but we'll let people slide in all the way till the day.
Assuming that there's still room.
Yes, if there's room, we'll let you come.
All right, very good. Again, more information on that. And it looks like you're talking turkey in that one.
Yes, talking turkey. Yes, all about turkey and giving
thanks.
It
is November. So.
Yes.
So a lot of things cooking in the month of November, quite literally, at the Findlay YMCA. Let me ask you, while we've got to hear kind of an update on where things stand, I know
too.
a lot of things going on at the YMCA, dirt moving and all of that. So.
Yes. So as you maybe drove past, you're going to see that we were digging. So we did break ground for the ELC. It's been about a month ago. I think the foundation is going to be placed here shortly. We are still actively engaging in some donations, not just for the ELC, but we're moving on to phase two of the project, which is a brand new rec center, YMCA. So you're going to see us out in the community starting to share that story of the next phase of this project.
Yeah, and I know we've talked briefly about that in the past, but just to kind of give an update, first of all, everything's still online for the time frame for the Early Learning Center that you mentioned. Obviously, with the winter season coming up, that can always be trying to get as much done before that weather settles in.
Yep.
But then do you have a timeline on the rest of the project, on that phase two part of the project?
Yeah, so it's not, we're just penciling this in, but we're looking to break ground for the rec center in 2026.
Okay.
And that is a bit of a bigger project, so that would be more of a two-year commitment until we would move in. So.
Hence the reason why you're now, getting out there and starting to talk about it and fundraise and, things like that for that, because it's such a big project.
It's such a big project. I mean, what brings with the rec center is brand new swimming pools. We're seeing a major need for that within the community, extending our lap swimming along with some family fun venture pool. We also recognize that there's a major need for gymnasium space. Not only for us, we are growing rapidly. We have about 550 kids in our basketball program. So we'll be expanding that footprint of gymnasium space. So that's some of the amenities. There's more, though.
Yeah. And I'm sure if folks have questions, they can probably ask at events like Men Who Cook.
Exactly.
You'll be there.
Absolutely.
Again, that is coming up on Saturday, right?
Yes, this Saturday.
Okay, give us all of the details once
again. This Saturday, November 9th, you can find us at the Hancock Hotel. Tickets are $25. We start off, we kick off at 6, and we'll go through the evening, and we'll have some big awards, and it'll be a great night.
Yeah, we've got a link on our webpage for more information at goodmornings.net, an event you will not want to miss. And make sure you bring your appetite. Again, Sierra, Stephanie, thanks very much for dropping by.
Chris, we appreciate you.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program. Of course, remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. And that, of course, goodmornings.net. Coming up tomorrow on the program, we'll talk more about the impact of this week's election. What's the old saying? It's the economy, stupid. Many voters cited economic concerns as a key issue that swayed their decision in the presidential election. Will Donald Trump be able to deliver the relief Americans are hoping for? So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.